Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 112 of Season 7 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is J-Bam John from the Dirty Harry Minute. Welcome back to the show, John.
Thank you, Rob. Yeah, you don't have John McClane. You've just got J-Bam John. Thanks for having me back. I'm a bald man, so I really love in the early 90s.
What do you mean just? What do you mean just? You're the right person for this. What do you mean just?
I'm just, as in I'm just and honorable and righteous. And yeah, I would definitely track down scum like Simon. But yes, male pattern baldness. We see a great shot in this minute of John McClane and how brave that was. You know, you could have a leading man and a shot of the baldness receding ahead. But anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. I mean, when you talk about that, you can see the receding hairline, how it changes, over the course of these first three movies, and the fourth movie. There's no question about how that changes. But that's 12 years later. So, you know, that sort of makes sense. Mm.
Yeah. Are you going to do that one day?
That is the plan. The plan is that's going to be season 9, but we'll have to see what happens between now and then. You know, we shall wait and see. Cool. So minute 112 begins with John getting an idea and ends with John blowing some bubbles. So we ended things yesterday with the bomb getting activated and starting to make all its noise and mixing and stuff like that. And, they do a great job with the music here. You know, they change the tone of the music to tell us that, okay, something is going on. And we see John frantically looking around trying to find something to do. And he picks up what looks like a crowbar. You know, and decides that he's going to try to find some way to save Zeus. Because, Zeus is trapped right now. And John is there to try and save him. You know. Now, do you know any other names for a crowbar? Maybe down under you have a different name for it. You know.
No, I'm just thinking, something with G or J, like a Jimmy, to Jimmy something open. I've never really seen them in the wild. I've never worked in a warehouse or anything. It's something I always thought maybe it was a Hollywood invention. Like, is it just to open crates in warehouses, like longshoremen? Is it a Jimmy or a Jiff or something like that?
No.
I don't think
so. One second. You're close. It's a Jemmy in Australia.
A Jemmy. Okay.
Yep. Jemmy. Jemmy. Yes. But the other names for it are a wrecking bar, a pry bar, a pinch bar, a prize bar. It's also known as a pig bar or a gooseneck because of the shape. And as I said, in England and Australia, it's known as a jemmy. And it's basically a lever that's consisting of a metal bar with a single curved end and flattened points. And it's used to force two objects apart or gain some sort of mechanical advantage while lifting. Often the curved end has a notch in order to help also possibly remove nails and things like that.
Yeah, I guess the verb is to jemmy or to jimmy or something. Yeah, I failed there.
But could
be. They all sort of make sense. What was the other one you called? A goose?
No, you call it a lot of different things. Pimple? A gooseneck. A gooseneck.
Gooseneck. Interesting.
Yes. Now, do you know why it's called a crowbar?
No idea. Can't be anything to do with the animal, the bird, can it?
It has a lot to do with the animal, with the bird. It is basically the shape of the curved end resembles the feet and beak of a crow. So therefore, they would use that. And that term goes all the way back to the 1400s. And it's actually in one of Shakespeare's most famous plays.
Ooh.
Do you have any idea which play it might be in?
No idea. Are there any carpenters or anything in any Shakespeare plays? Is it like for a coffin or something? Macbeth? I'll go with Macbeth. No idea. Macbeth?
It's actually in Romeo and Juliet.
Oh. Interesting. Okay.
In Act 5, Scene 2, there's the phrase, "Get me an iron crow and bring it straight onto my cell." Okay, because it's also
Oh.
just known as a crow. In Daniel Defoe's novel Robinson Crusoe, he also uses a crowbar because he's looking for a pickaxe and can't find one. So he instead made use of the iron crows, which were proper enough, though heavy. So you see, it's pretty cool
There you
that
go.
these type of things go so far back. Yeah, not type of thing
But
you
the
would normally
question
expect.
is, as we were talking about last minute, does a crowbar appear in any of Cervantes's work?
Well,
See,
this is from even
Shakespeare's good
earlier
enough.
than Cervantes, isn't it? Isn't Shakespeare's earlier than Cervantes, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe an extra 50 years before or
There
something.
you go.
Yeah, perhaps.
There you go.
Yes, perhaps
So
you're
you
right.
see, you have a crowbar, in order to make sure that that you have a pot and kettle that are black.
Very good. Whenever I think crowbar, I just think Home Alone, but I know you think I think about Home Alone all the time, which is sort of true. But when I think Daniel Stern's trying to open something up, anyway,
I think in every
what
season that you've
immediately
been on,
comes to mind for
you've
me.
mentioned Home Alone. I remember in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, you mentioned Home
Yeah,
Alone.
it's got it's got its claws into me, so it's crow claws. Yeah, I've always, yeah, it's just a great movie, you know.
Okay. Makes sense. Okay.
Crowbar. So he finds one. He finds one just lying in the hole somewhere, does he?
We don't even see him pick it up. Which he happens to have it in his hand as he's going through things. And I mean, John has a very interesting
Lee.
idea of what to do here. He takes the crowbar and basically smashes it against one of the two glass containers and starts letting things start spraying out. And Zeus is really, really wondering what's going on because he can't see. And he goes, "What the hell are you doing?" And he goes, "Get ready, lean forward." He goes, "What? Lean forward, God damn it!" And he goes, "What? What the f are you doing?" And he goes, "Now it's going to be go fast, lean forward."
Yeah.
And at the same time, John then breaks into the second one, and we see it's spurting from there also. And he then dips the crowbar into both. Both liquids, the red liquid and what looks like a white liquid, even though it's theoretically supposed to be green, but whatever. And what I think is great here is the fact that they sort of gave us a little bit of a preview of this, months ago when we were, still back in the beginning of the movie when Weiss, shows them what this explosive combination can do. The whole thing with the chair. And so
Oh,
we
that's
know,
right, yeah.
and John learned this from there, that all you have to do is mix them together. And you have a, solvent explosive. And then he takes the crowbar and just smashes it in between Zeus's hands, where the handcuffs are. And we see this like huge electric shock happen. And Zeus, like, just his hands are broken away from that point or whatever. Now, do you think this would really work?
I suppose in one respect it doesn't matter because the cinema logic, we've been exposed to it, as you mentioned at the start of the film. I wonder how many people watching at this point would remember, you know, back 8 minutes ago to that scene. But in real life, my answer would probably be no. Yeah, you tell me. Do we have a chemist's opinion? How unstable can they be? No. No.
No, chemist's opinion on this one. No, sorry, just my opinion. We didn't go with the chemist this time. No, my opinion is this is it's very risky for John to even think that this is going to work and that it's not going to either kill or severely wound or amputate one of Zeus's arms by doing this type of thing. I mean, you'd think that this is a strong enough explosive to blow up a ship, blow up a train, blow up anything you want to do, you want to blow it up. And even just the small amount of it that Weiss had on a paperclip was able to make a chair go flying. John has a little bit more than that on top of on the edge of this cross of this crowbar. It takes me back to what we were talking about yesterday when we were talking about Titanic, that if when he takes the crowbar and he has to get it exactly on the handcuffs. So I mean, we had the same thing with a with an axe, where Rose needed to, break the handcuff on his hands.
Yes. And she just practices once. Good enough. And she completely misses it. Okay. Very good. But
And as John is getting ready to smash into the handcuffs, so Zeus goes, "Oh no!" And he goes, "Lean forward, get ready, move your hands." He goes, "Damn, motherfucking!" And the whole thing is, just completely breaks open the handcuffs. Obviously, Zeus still has the cuffs on him; just it's no longer chained together. And at this point, then John says to him, "Come on, let's go." And he goes, "Oh, goddamn, goddamn." And they seem to have forgotten the fact that Zeus has been shot in the leg and the foot. We're not sure exactly where he's been shot. I mean, what specific part of his anatomy has been shot? But we know he's supposed to be in a lot of pain, because it didn't seem as if Simon had just winged him. It really did seem as if he shot him. And but Zeus is able to walk and then jump down from one canister to another. And then after he jumps, he goes, "Oh, f leg, ow." And actually, no, I'm
It's
sorry.
not as
He
bad
actually
as
says it before he jumps.
it's not
He complains about it
gone.
and then jumps. And then what? Yeah.
Yeah, he's
Could be.
anticipating.
And then, I mean, they start climbing
Oh
up the stairs there. John goes, "Get upstairs, come on, go, get upstairs." And then as they're moving up, so Zeus goes, "Oh, damn it, my foot." Continuing to complain about this. But again, if I had been shot in the leg, I don't think I could walk upstairs, or in this case, move quite fast upstairs. So something's a little off with that. That's what I would say about that.
Do you like the ADR of Samuel's oh fuck,
I
do
think
you
it's a
like it?
little over the
Is
top.
it
I think
over
it is
it's
a
not
little
over
over
the
the top.
top corny like Nicolas Cage in The Wicker Man? Is it the Wicker Man type stuff? Like,
I
oh
don't
my
know. I mean,
legs, my
I
legs.
think it is a
Ah,
little bit
God.
over the top here.
That's not that bad.
I
But
do. But again, it's Samuel L. Jackson, so it makes it fun.
it's very, very quick. Yeah.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in the previous minute, you commented on the music being quite good in the background. Did you think it sounded a little bit like the Goldfinger theme?
No,
Not the sh
I
not the
didn't.
Shirley Bassey one, but okay.
No, I didn't. I didn't notice that connection. It's possible.
It sounded a bit Bondy, like one of the 60s instrumentals on some of the action scenes. That's what came to mind for me.
Okay.
But there you go.
And here we go. In a second episode in a row, talking about James Bond. You sure you did a podcast on Dirty Harry and not James Bond?
I did only Dirty Harry.
Okay.
I think someone was reviewing each Bond movie every 7 seconds, I think. No, every second. Sorry, every second minutes, I think, or scene by scene. But that was a few years ago. I don't know if they're still doing it.
Don't know.
Before we go on, there were a few shots earlier on where we saw McLean, his legs and his trousers and his shoes. Have you commented on his shoes before? What they are? Are they just? They almost look like school shoes or something, or business shoes almost. And I thought, oh. And then I thought, How did we see him in the morning in the truck? What were his shoes?
Wasn't he barefoot?
But yeah, his shoes look a bit preppy.
I thought that he was barefoot in the. I mean, the first movie he was barefoot, so obviously.
Well, he's got sort of like black school shoes.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
What do you think those shoes are? They look sort of like just black basic. I don't know what you call them. School, just use school shoes. School shoes. You know, like
I would say
primary school shoes. Like, anyway, I just thought it looked a weird choice.
Dress shoes. That's what I would call them.
Dress shoes. Yes. Yeah. Not too fancy, but yeah. Anyway, I suppose he's had them all day. When he woke up with the hangover in the bus, we didn't really see his shoe feet. I don't think. Maybe when he was in Harlem.
We can.
Yeah. That's just one silly note I had. I thought his shoes look a bit.
Now he is wearing shoes. When he does get off the truck in Harlem, he's wearing dress shoes and white socks. He's allowed to be there with shoes.
He's always allowed. When
it's up to Simon.
Did we think he was just night? He was. Simon says that's great. Did he choose the clothes? Did he?
Well, he must have told him what he's allowed to wear because he had him stripped down to his underwear, but he's still allowed to wear, you know, wear his Dockers and white socks.
Did we come to a conclusion in previous minutes whether maybe he had a sad night of home drinking the night before or just woke up half an hour ago? Or did he go out to a pub or... Does the script mention that at all?
Well, the original script shows that he's
home alone.
It shows that he's a drunk, and they also have Ricky and Lambert come to his apartment and pick him up. You know, so they're
oh, okay.
So we do get somewhat of an idea from that perspective, but because the script also goes more into the fact about him, you know, being distraught over his marriage and his kids and stuff like that. You know, the first few minutes of the script talks about all those different things. They show him in court with, during the custody battle and things like that. But they cut all that out of the movie in the end. I guess they just didn't feel they needed it.
Hey, can I put on my Dockers? Can I just put on my black school shoes, Lieutenant? Anyway, that is this shoes strike me as a bit funny.
Right.
Not like Tim Robbins in Shawshank Redemption, but it just seems weird for him to wear that. Maybe that's his style. Anyway, sorry, tangent. Let's move on to them sprinting up the stairs.
Yes. So we see them sprinting up the stairs, and then we get a shot from the outside. And there's a strange sign on the door that says closed when at sea.
Oh. Oh, yeah.
Which is a strange way to talk about that, you know, because it's something in the past. It's in past.
What do they call that? A tautology. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're always floating, but maybe not in the sea. Yeah, it's a bit. I wonder how they should have worded it, or how it. I mean, obviously they didn't. It's an existing boat. I'm sure they didn't dress the set.
No. I mean, we know it's an existing. It's the Forest Swan. You know, so it's a ship that's still sailing today. You know, you could even do a search. Even do a search online right now and find out where it is at this very moment. You know, we talked a few weeks ago that it was in. I think it was in Norway at the time. And as we were talking about it, it was like it was docking at that very moment. It was actually very cool. But they've changed the name of the ship numerous times over the years. Well, the funniest thing is that there are places which mention that the ship is a fictitious ship, but it's actually not. Where is the Forest Swan today, which is now known as the Hvitanes?
How do you spell that?
Hvitanes.
Ah, funny if it does carry gold from time to time.
Well, it didn't.
How many tourists,
didn't really.
Sorry, fan hunted down.
Didn't really find it. Okay, so the ship, the first one, which is now known as the Hvaralis, is right now docked in Alta, Norway. They actually, there you go. It's
Oh.
actually it's in the process of as we are recording right now. Within 2 hours, it will be completely docked, but it is being moored and brought into the into the dock in Alta, Norway. So again, it's very cool that you can find this stuff out. So so close to reality. So I found that to be really cool. Yeah.
That's nice.
So John and Zeus come out of this door, which is closed when at sea, and the two of them are running. And once again, you got to give Samuel L. Jackson a lot of credit. He's just hopping along, even though he's been shot. He's still able to move pretty fast. And the two of them start screaming, let's go down there at the back of the boat. Come on. No, God damn it. Run, God damn it. I am you. Come on. All right. And then John says, watch, watch, watch. And it makes me wonder, like, what is he saying? Be careful, or is he saying, watch me? Which of those do you think it is? He's saying, take my lead. I'm gonna jump, and you should look down and see what I do. You think that's what he's saying, basically?
I think so. This could be a lost in trans. Yeah. Do you, in America, do you use the word watch as the same as
Yeah,
you do
sure.
for look? Like look out? Like would you, if you were accompanying someone and look out, look, would you say look or
I
watch?
would normally say look out. I would it's they're
Same word,
interchangeable.
interchangeable words?
Look out
Yeah,
or
look.
watch out. That type of thing.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I think maybe he's saying take
Okay.
my lead. I think
That's
that's
fair.
what he's saying.
And then the two of them climb onto the railing and they jump, and then behind them we see a big explosion. Now that I think the special effects are okay here, but the green screen looks really bad. You can easily tell that the two of them are not there
Yeah.
by the way that this explosion goes.
Yeah, I've paused that shot right now. Yeah, the one where sort of both Bruce's feet at 40 seconds, both Bruce's feet are on the rail. And once again, you can see his dress school shoes incongruously there. And Samuel L. Jackson's half got one of his left leg over the rail in the process of jumping, not far behind. Yeah, and you are right. It's
Yeah,
pretty
but I mean,
bad
again,
process
the
shot.
explosion itself is great.
But then again, people were just watching in the cinema.
Okay, but we also have to give them credit for the
Yeah.
fact this was 1995. I mean, CGI was not perfected yet at that point. So,
Yeah.
to show us something like this is okay. You can't complain too much, I guess. And then they give us a great shot
Yeah,
from the
not at all.
beach. You can see all the people on the beach that see the explosion, and they're running towards it to see what's going on, which I think is a very cool shot to have there, because it's basically telling us, okay, there are people are noticing this. This is the main reason that Simon did it this way. He wants people to see it. He wants to make a spectacle, just like his brother, of something exploding and making everyone think that what's there is what you're really looking for, that type of thing.
It's a great shot, and I appreciate what you've just said. In reality, I'm sort of saying, what, look at the weather of the overcast day as well. Like, what sort of party was going on that beach? Like, that everyone suddenly runs over. Looks like a pretty day for a party. But yeah, as you say, it's an arresting shot and pretty cool. But logically, I don't think it makes much sense. And while they're running so quick, like generally, if you hear an explosion, you're not going to suddenly. They've already got a good view of it on the beach with all the wherever they are. I don't know why they necessarily need to run quickly a few, 100 yards to sort of see what's happened. And so quick as well. You think it might take a. Were they all intently gazing at the ocean or the? Is this the river, the Hudson
No,
River,
this is the
whatever it is?
Long Island
How many of them
Sound.
were looking at it
These are all people
intently?
on the beaches,
It's a bit
on the beaches
imponderable.
of Long
I.
Island.
Long Island, my apologies.
I wanted to know how many beaches there were, but I couldn't find a definitive answer as to how many beaches are around here, because I got like a list of 65 different beaches but they're on both sides of Long Island, so that doesn't help me because I just want from the Long Island Sound and not the ones, that are actually part of the Atlantic.
You used to live there, did you? Did you used to live in
I
this
used to live
part
in
of the
New
world, or?
Jersey, about 90 minutes
Ah,
south of that
Joyce.
area.
Ah, John McClane.
He doesn't live in New Jersey. He's New York. He never mentions he lived in New Jersey. Yeah.
Is he? Oh, what's all that stuff about Bruce Willis talking about the New Jersey humor and stuff? Or is
I
that
think it's
him
him personally.
personally? About how he's, why he's. Oh, okay. Oh,
Yeah.
okay. Sorry, I'm confused. Oh, he's always talking NYPD.
Right.
Yeah, fair enough.
Right. And then the shot changes, and we get to see basically two bodies land in the water. And
Yeah.
it's quite funny watching the way that they do this. I mean, we get 8 seconds here. 8 seconds of
mean?
these two guys floating in the water,
Yeah.
with bubbles coming out of their mouths. Do you think they're unconscious at this point? You think that the blast has knocked them unconscious?
Well, technically that would make them drowning, wouldn't it? I mean, that'd be pretty dangerous if they were,
I
but
mean,
you're
it
right,
looks
it
like maybe
certainly
they get
looks
the
like
wind knocked out of them or
they are
something,
for a few seconds. Why haven't the filmmakers given something for the ladies? Like, couldn't they be naked, or couldn't we see some biceps or something? Couldn't the blast have made them, or Bruce Willis sex symbol, and couldn't they have had something a bit tantalizing? Maybe the clothes had blown off or something. Boom, boom, tish. That's my little joke. Sorry.
Well, I mean, again, this is an action movie. I don't know what type of action movies you like from the 90s,
Yeah.
but in this one, it wasn't needed.
I always remember that the movie, Mel Gibson movie, Peter Weir, Gallipoli. Have you ever seen
Yeah,
that?
sure.
The war movie, World War One. Yeah, there's that scene where they're having a
1981.
swim, in a pause in the shooting, 1981. Yeah, and yeah, they have a little swim, and then an artillery barrage hits the beach, and they're sort of underwater shots of them, and one of them gets shot in the arm, even under the water, some shrapnel, and they're sort of, yeah, they're just sort of nude frolicking. You see a bit of Mel Gibson there. That's all. That was my touchstone.
Okay.
That's an action movie too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
But yeah.
All right. Did you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
No, not really. Lot going on, you know. The I hope Samuel J's going to get some aspirin at the end of whatever happens if he gets out of the water. We'll look at that next minute.
We'll have to do that tomorrow. Exactly. All right. So once again, nothing for the script, but every Tuesday we have a segment called A Trilogy Tuesday, where my guests will give their top five movie trilogies. So, what have you got for us, John?
Okay. Down the bottom, since we last recorded, there's been a new installment in this. So I don't know if it's technically still a trilogy, but it was when I was looking at this. Number five, Beverly Hills Cop. Do we consider this recent Netflix one
It's
number four?
okay.
I
It's
guess we
not a
do.
problem.
Anyway,
I'm
table that
very
for later.
flexible when it comes to this list, so you are more than welcome to add Beverly Hills Cop onto there.
Thank you, Rob.
No problem.
Number four, Naked Gun. Love it. Number three, let's just put Star Wars in there, okay? Even if it's a quintology or whatever, quatology, whatever it is now.
I mean, you could say
Then number two,
you could say that you want Star Wars to be the the original trilogy or
original,
whatever.
yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, the original trilogy as it stood. Number three. Number two, and it was really hard to decide for me between second and first place, but I went end with Back to the Future for number two. And then number one, the Spaghetti Westerns, the Clint Eastwood Dollars trilogy, of course, has to be the top of my favorite trilogy of all time.
You would have a Clint Eastwood? Oh, come on. Wait, isn't there a name
Who
for
would
the
have thought of?
trilogy? It's
Yeah.
the Man with No Name trilogy, isn't
The Dollars.
it? The Dollars
I guess
trilogy,
so.
right.
I've heard of it called the Dollars Trilogy
Yes,
right
yes,
before,
yes,
yeah.
yes, yes,
Even
yes.
though only two of them have that in the title, but yeah.
Right. Yeah, I've actually heard that. It's called the Dollars trilogy. You are correct. Right. All right, excellent. Thank you very much for that list. Would you like to once again tell people where they can find J-Bam?
DirtyHarryMinute.com. That's one word, DirtyHarryMinute.com. And you can look at all of our episodes reviewing minute by minute the first Dirty Harry movie, 1971. And then we did a lot of standalone episodes about everything, policing in the 2000s, the sequels. Yeah, a lot of interesting things, even some fan fiction. I don't know if you've done any diehard fan fiction.
No, not at all.
But you could always do it. Nah.
Oh, wow. Okay, great. And
so, yeah, that's
and
it.
Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Mini. Twitter, you can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, send it to movieroundminute@movierob.net. So, until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Johnny comes marching home again. Hoorah, hoorah. We'll give him a hearty welcome then. Hoorah, hoorah. The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.